Welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, high achievers, and risk takers. I'm your host, Ian Bergman, and together we'll uncover the challenges, triumphs, and secrets behind successful innovation journeys. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, an industry veteran, or simply curious about the ever-evolving landscape of innovative ideas and what it takes to put them into practice, this is the podcast for you. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's embark on this exciting journey together. Okay, so welcome to Alchemist Innovators Inside. I am really pleased today to welcome Alchemist founder, Kostas Katalis. Kostas, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to get started with a little bit of your story. You have a deeply technical background. You've written, you've researched, you've published. You are a startup founder, and I just found out recently a young parent, which is absolutely wonderful. Tell me a little bit about your background and yourself. How did you get going down this entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, my background goes all the way back to high school, really, where I started to develop a huge passion for AI. And I read, if you know the author, Ray Kurzweil's book, The Singularity is Near. And
such a good book.
Such a great book that the moment I read it like five times over and over again. Something just clicked. I'm like, okay, I want to study AI. I want to research AI. I want to build new types of AI by doing a PhD. And I want to build a company. So it was a very untraditional path where I would go through academia to with the passion to get a PhD in AI, but for the purposes of then building a company right after grad school, which is a very untraditional path to building a company. But I, at the time, early 2010s, late 2000s, you know, no one was building AI companies. They were very rough, very early. I'm like, okay, this field has not yet taken off. It's a golden opportunity to just push the boundaries with something very advanced and then just build a company out of it. So I have three bachelor's, a master's, a PhD, a postdoc, 24 publications in AI, journal papers, conference papers, and so forth. And then at the beginning of the pandemic, which who could predict a pandemic, got together with my co-founder. Her name is Despina. She's in Greece. She was a PhD student at the time. I just graduated at the time. And we came together. We have previous experience working together on AI projects. And we both knew we wanted to build a company. So we got together and built a company right when the pandemic started for the most part. But yeah, my background is AI. I have a huge passion for it. I dabbled into the idea of entrepreneurship throughout my PhD, doing startup programs, doing competitions, hackathons, but nothing took off because I was doing a PhD. I couldn't do both at the same time.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I had to wait until I finished the PhD and then I started doing stuff. But yeah, that's my background effectively.
And that's awesome. This gives you a broad base of experience to apply against what you're doing. Now, what are you doing? Tell us about GoCharlie.
Yes. So GoCharlie was formed initially to serve businesses and marketing agencies in helping them create content. And we created the idea right when GPT-3 was coming out. So no one really had a tool to create marketing content. Now, unfortunately, I took a bad route in building the company. I went after government funding coming out of a PhD program. That's all I knew how to do. So I had applied to
grant application.
Grant application after grant application. I applied to DOD, DARPA, NSF, and it was rejection after rejection. Mostly them saying that my ideas were impossible, that AI is never going to be able to create full content. I'm going to frame these one day in my office. But yeah, it took a little while to get off.
How motivating is that? And honestly, you've got to have a little bit of like vindictive, like Schadenfreude is not the right word, but there's got to be a little bit of I told you so going on right now. Not right now, for the last year.
Oh, hugely. I mean, unfortunately, I can't go on a huge rant and say I told you so because the field just overnight exploded to the extent that now it all feels normal. So I don't think anyone would even remember me, but I just remember the early days. It just took us a long time to develop these kind of systems, get attention. And now we all think it's just normal that AI can talk and think and generate content.
Yeah, it is amazing how quickly we take these things for granted. So you've been building this while the world around you has been evolving rapidly. So what's the thing right now that you go to customers and say, I can do this for you, I can solve this problem?
So my core philosophy for the company is constant innovation, which is something that I've seen a lot of our competitors fail at. For example, in our space, you know, we're a generative AI company to help create marketing content. And we're now evolving into the space of autonomous agents, where not only do we have our own model to create the content, and we can also customize the content to businesses and enterprises because we own the entire Gen AI tech stack. And I can dive deeper into what it means building our own models. But in building autonomous agents, which is what I really think is the future, which, by the way, let's get into that a bit later too, we go from creating the content to now asking the AI, hey, build me a full campaign and eventually just run the campaign for me. I just want to click a button and not do anything. So we're different in the sense that we're building the stack for all across these kinds of products. For example, Jasper. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Jasper. It's an AI company.
Yep.
It came out of 2020. In 2022, they raised $125 million Series A. And not to say anything bad about them, but according to insiders, they're on fire. They're falling right now. Actually, many of our competitors who did not build their own AI or their own tech, they're just plug and plays into, you know, GPT-3, GPT-4, are kind of struggling because what OpenAI did in the last 2 years is kind of saturate the market and said, okay, anyone who knows how to use an API, boom, now you can build your own AI products. So how do you differentiate yourself?
Sure.
Well, constant innovation. You have to be ahead of the curve at every point. Like every week, we're developing new ideas, new models. It's a constant race at this point.
So, you know, a constant race sounds exhausting. Where do you kind of find your motivation and your drive? And maybe a different way of asking that is, what's the goalpost that you're looking ahead to?
Yeah. The good news is that we see the light at the end of the tunnel. That light is effectively the fact that no one else is building their own tech. I mean, yes, you have about, I would say, 5-6 tech giants, OpenAI, Cohere, Anthropic, Adept, 2 or 3 other ones, that raised hundreds of millions and billions of dollars pre-product, pre-revenue. Don't get me started. I have my own opinions about why VCs are some of the worst people on the planet. And they just tend to just...
I won't take that too personally. But hey, VCs just enabled a lot of... VCs just enabled NVIDIA to sell a lot of GPUs to these companies.
They do.
Yeah.
No, certain VCs. It reminds me of the crypto craze where they would dump hundreds of millions of dollars into crypto companies,
right,
pre-product, pre-revenue, then they go bankrupt 2 years later. Whereas with whenever we pitch, and many of our, you know, and I know many friends who are founders who pitch just get grilled on due diligence. And we just finished our pre-seed and it took almost a year to get the full amount of our pre-seed together. A lot of due diligence, a lot of deep dives. And then I see these bigger companies and just like, there's one company in France called Inception that 4 weeks after they were founded, no product, closed $100 million, another raising $300 million. Dollars out of nowhere. But anyway, I get it. You know, they have connections. But we got them aside, everyone else, and there's about 1,000 generative AI companies now in the US alone, very few are building their own tech. And at our stage to build tech, for example, we're about to release a large language model dedicated to marketing, domain specific. We are seeing results that are on par with ChatGPT and GPT-4 and surpassing it for certain things. The fact that we can build that without tens or hundreds of millions of dollars is a testament that we're onto something.
Yes.
And it might be a sign that these bigger companies, as more startups build their own tech, they're going to start sweating. They're going to realize, especially the, investors will realize, why should we invest in these bigger companies when a lot of small companies can start building the stuff that they're building? And I think we're one of the very first companies to prove this. In fact, the VP of AWS quoted me that they believe that there will be AI models for everything in the future, in the coming months, where it's not just one big player like GPT-4 that dominates everything, right? There's going to be models for marketing, for finance, for medicine, everything.
That's of course.
Small players will sign.
And unique foundational models, not just embedded, trained,
yes,
tuned.
Oh, everything. All the above. Everything is hard to do. Foundational models, fine-tuned models for enterprise customers, multimodal models that can handle images, audio, and video. Everything is on the horizon for both us and potentially other startups too.
Awesome. Well, I can certainly see how this keeps your intellectual curiosity engaged, right? You are on the cutting edge, and probably the team motivated. Let's talk a little bit about what it's been like building this company. I want to get into the customer and partner side of innovation in a second, but you know, right now I'm speaking to you as a founder.
Yeah.
You came into Alchemist relatively unique for the founders who find us. You came in with an idea.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about that journey and what it's been like getting the company off the ground.
So we were very early for an Alchemist company. We came in, we did not form the company legally. We came in at the ideation stage. We had a few prototypes of demos, and we had a couple companies we were talking to with LOIs, but Ravi and the others who interviewed us saw something in us, in the sense that you guys have ambition, you have vision, you're building your own tech. That's something that's very rare. Whereas a lot of the other companies already had established MRR, typically 5 to 6 figures large.
Yep.
And we're just achieving MRR to those levels now. It's been a long journey since Alchemist. We came out of Demo Day back in 2021. We raised $150,000, our first checks ever. And since then, it was just me and my other co-founder, Despina. We had two advisors in Alchemist who now became our CTO and our COO. So Alchemist gave us those.
Amazing.
It's awesome what these mentors can do for you when they fall in love with your vision.
Okay. And so you had to get first product into market. You had to, you know, drive some customer feedback. You had to iterate in a changing world.
Yeah.
And you just closed a pre-seed round. What's the use of your pre-seed funds?
So our pre-seed round, we just closed about $1.5 million. We have a current product on the market. The current product is, I would say, very similar to other marketing AI generative products. We generate images, we generate marketing content, but we do all of that case by case, where there's a separate UI for email, a separate UI for blogs, a separate UI for images. And it's again, similar to our like competitors like to Jasper. We are using the pre-seed funding right now to expand the team, expand sales efforts, because we want to grow more the B2B side, but also in launching a new product. We're doing it now in September, which is going to this new, I would say, the next step in the AI evolution, which is autonomous agents. That it's not enough for them to just create content. It's time for them to start executing complex tasks on your behalf.
I mean, I like this dream. I got really excited about auto GPT, baby AGI, right? All these controls.
Yeah.
And I'm still excited about them. But I will say that for a while, I felt like all I had really done is build a really efficient bridge between OpenAI's API and my credit card. So, like, you know, tell me about the work on these autonomous agents and their ability to drive task completion.
Yes. So, my AI background, I was very embedded in what's called the world of cognitive systems. So, the AI research field has been studying the idea of an intelligent agent for the last 30 years. And there's a lot of theory. But there's been a very a huge disconnect between that as an academic field and commercial products.
Sure.
GPT-4, LLMs in general, have shown immense applications in reasoning and generating content. There's a natural fit to use an LLM for reasoning, for planning, for learning. AutoGPT, BabyAGI, and there's about a dozen of these projects on GitHub, are very early iterations of this. They got very basic components of reasoning and planning and learning, but they're nowhere near the robust theories that we see in computer science, cognitive systems, cognitive psychology, and so forth. We're just at the tip of the iceberg in building true, what's called a cognitive architecture or theory of mind for AI, where they can truly reason, plan, and learn, execute tasks. And for the most part, it's a bit of the Wild West, where you have researchers, academics, companies, startups, hackers, trying to think, okay, how can we actually, for the first time ever, build a mind that's slowly getting to on par to what a human can do, to how a human can think. And it's very exciting.
That is exciting. You know, a lot of ink has been spilled on the tension between how exciting and terrifying that is. But honestly, it is really exciting. And when we talk about innovation, like, you know, what this podcast, right, is all about quote unquote innovation. And what is innovation but behavior change for better outcomes, or, you know, is one definition. This technology is driving behavior changes. And when I think about autonomous agents creating content, I think of the scene in the last season of Westworld, right, where we see a dictation of a story, right, and then the computer filling it in. I don't know if you watch that.
Yeah, I know the scene you're talking about.
You know the scene I'm talking about. Is that where we're headed?
That and way beyond that too. There is, this may sound, I don't know if it sounds rude or arrogant for me to say, but there is almost nothing that a person can do on a digital computer that in the next 2 to 10 years, AI will not be able to do.
I don't think that sounds rude or arrogant at all, but I think it leads to a really interesting question, which is, what is the tipping point at which human input is no longer additive to the final product?
Oh, that's a tough question and a good question. And one I think everyone in many fields are sort of thinking about now. I would say there's always going to be a need for the human touch, at least as a decision maker for big things. It will be very transitionary, meaning the next couple of months and years, you're going to have human feedback in terms of, okay, is this content good or bad, or redo it, or let me edit it for you. And as we interact more and more with AI, it will learn from those interactions. It'll start scraping the entire internet more and more. And eventually, it'll get to the point where we will reach a plateau in terms of how much more utility can a human provide the AI? How much more new knowledge can they provide it?
Sure.
If it's already learned everything that's on the internet, there's very limited. And it's already interacted with, I say, millions of people for billions of hours. It'll reach a plateau to how much more we can have to offer it before it just starts reaching our level in terms of cognitive and task ability.
Obviously, it's impossible to predict the future, right? But it seems like when I look at sci-fi, when I talk to people like you that are deep in the theory, the biggest unknown is generally not around access to information, not even around reasoning or constructing content. It's around the question of the spark of creativity, right? Mm-hmm. The spark of the new idea, and how long until or if the AI engines get to that level. If we go back to the Westworld example, right? Like, that was the role that, oh, I forget her name, Dolores's character was playing, right? And that was kind of the only role that Dolores's character was playing.
The spark of creativity, even with humans, is a combination of exploration and exploitation of what we like. So it is not too far off to think that an AI one day can run its own experiments of randomly trying new ideas, just completely random ideas, and seeing what, you know, sticks to the wall, versus running internal simulations and say, okay, what's a good idea, what's a bad idea? So it will start reaching that level soon. Like, we think that, oh, we're special because we have creativity.
Fascinating.
But what is creativity other than exploration versus exploitation.
Reminds me of a Twitter thread or X thread, I don't know what I'm supposed to call it these days, that I saw recently where someone was describing ant behavior. And basically the crazy ants were the only ones who go try something else. Yes. Then the rest of the colony figures out if that was a good or a bad idea, often at that ant's cost.
You get 10 bonus points for that, because that's called swarm intelligence, which is a huge aspect of AI research. Yes. Which that's what humans are great at. We're a swarm. Multiple people, you know, trying different ideas, and eventually you get enough people, you know, you produce gold, diamonds. Same thing with ants. One ant can't do much on its own, but you put a whole colony trying different things. They can build bridges. They can build towers. It's amazing what ants can do.
That's so cool. And I've never gotten bonus points on the cast before. So sweet. I'm excited about that. This is fascinating conversation. I want to bring it back down to earth in a way, hopefully not in a boring way, because we're talking about technological capabilities, you know, moving forward fairly rapidly. And these capabilities are intersecting with people's jobs.
Yeah.
And you are selling to those people, I think, or you're selling to the people around those people. You know, what's it like right now being in the world of AI assisted, AI created content creation, right in the stick to the domain of marketing for now. We're going to get to other areas in a second.
It's ironic because you hear stories in other areas where like art and copywriting, and people start panicking, my jobs are in jeopardy. In marketing, marketers feel this too. But when I say it's ironic, it's that they keep demanding us more and more autonomous features, like do the research for me, write the content for me, execute the tasks for me. And of course, we're doing it. We think it's wonderful to automate things. But I don't think people are realizing, our customers and in marketing and many other areas too, that by asking for cheap AI to perform high quality complex tasks more autonomously, more and more and more things to do, they're effectively asking to automate their own jobs. And I don't think people are realizing this when they're asking us, for example, have it go do SEO analysis all on its own, recommend me blogs and post them on my behalf. I don't have to do anything. Yeah, that's great. If you're an SEO marketer for now, but it won't be long before companies realize that once the technology has matured, we won't need SEO marketers. We just need SEO agents. And then that marketer who 1,000x their output and had many customers and increased their short-term revenue, all of a sudden may be out of a job. So there are many social implications, and we can go into that if you'd like, but they're not really how scary it is.
Yeah. And I mean, for now, I want to stick with that sort of relationship with the user, the buyer, et cetera, because they don't realize it. And obviously, this is an oversimplification, but there's kind of two paths that you can take when you automate yourself out of a job, right? Like, you know, one path is, oh shit, I'm out of a job. I have to go sit on my couch and figure out how to feed myself. And the other path is, I have incredible new tools. My job changed. When you're thinking about the people using your product and the customers you're interacting with, it kind of sounds like they're not even thinking about that future right now. They're just thinking, oh, this makes my life easier today. I am more competitive today. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's perfectly fair. And it's fair because the AI is not there yet to fully automate their jobs. And a marketer may see GoCharlie or ChatGPT, oh, the quality is good, but it still needs some editing. I still need to make some decisions on my own. I have a job for now. What they don't realize is how fast this tech moves. And they don't realize that it could be months, maybe a few years before it gets to the point where you start sweating like, uh-oh, what can I do now? What is my useful? What's my utility?
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. And I was in a conversation with someone, oh, this must have been 6 months ago now. So, you know, lifetimes in the AI cycle. But it was with someone who spent a career doing brand marketing, agency work. And I was demoing some of the capabilities of, at the time, I think it was GPT-3 or 3.5. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his reaction was, that's incredible, mind-blowing. That the front end of idea generation, that bit where we all sit in a room and like the interns generate ideas before the real people get involved, is now automated away. I don't think it had clicked that, you know, it's going to slowly move up the value chain. I want to ask you about one other thing. you talk about how people, you know, maybe don't realize the pace of change, but you also kind of have hinted at another thing, which is that people start to take these capabilities for granted quite quickly.
Yes.
Right? We are less than a year into kind of common understanding, even within the domain of technology industry, on what LLMs can do.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And yet this stuff's taken for granted and sometimes overly dismissed, right? I'm going to take a completely different tact, right? Like Teslas, are they incredible drivers? No, but they can drive themselves, which is kind of freaking amazing, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of like a drunk six-year-old driving, but it's freaking amazing for those of us who grew up in an era where this was sci-fi. And yet we take it for granted. And in doing so, I think we maybe dismiss some of the progress. We say, oh, it's not human par. It's not good enough. Do you see that happening in the world of language models as well, whether it's the reasoning, the output, whatever else?
Yes, I do. And using the Tesla analogy, you know, we can go back, you know, 10 years ago, Tesla and many other companies were saying, oh, we're going to have autonomous cars next year. And it was always next year and next year and next year. And then a decade went by and we still don't have full autonomy yet. And people make the analogy with LLMs and other kind of generative tech where, oh, it's good now, but it'll never be great. It'll always just get a little bit better and better, but it'll never reach human professional level. But I think it's very different, this tech. The underlying neural networks, these are based off the underlying cognitive theories that we're now using, building agents off of, are getting much more powerful. We're getting much more better GPU computation. It's starting to move much faster, and we can see direct results. Like, yes, a car to drive itself is not there yet after 10 years, but in just the last 3 years, we've seen GPT-3 and other LLMs produce garbage, then produce high school, you know, level English, and then they're producing college level. Now they're producing professional level. And soon there's, you can put a team of 10 copywriters in about a year or so, and then have the 10 copywriters spend a week, write the best possible script or the best possible blog or article, and then have an AI do it in a millisecond. And then the AI will be judged always to be better. And that's coming too.
Well, and we've been talking about text, but perhaps the most kind of visceral and obvious example of this is what the last 12 months of progress on imagery.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And imagery to video, like the side by sides of Midjourney from 12 months ago versus today, right? Or even what you can do with the open source models. Like you can kind of draw the trend line forward pretty easily.
Oh, yeah. And many companies have complained to us, oh, Midjourney and DALL-E 2 and Stable Diffusion are fun for artistic purposes, but they're not there yet for marketing. And we at GoCharlie, we're exploring building our own vision models for e-commerce. Because where DALL-E and Midjourney really fail is they can't produce perfect product placement images.
Yep.
And in fact, there's a competitor called Typeface that raised $65 million and now they're raising $300 million, but they've not even built their own vision models yet, even though they're advertising that. But there's lots of demand. We've talked to many enterprise customers, Pepsi, Red Bull, that's all they want. And that's coming. We're seeing the early experiments we're doing internally, and our jaws are dropping to the floor. Oh my God, you don't need a photographer. All you need is a handful of sample photos, and the AI can make infinite variations that look perfectly photorealistic. A few more months from now, you add text into the mix and infographics, like, you know what Canva does with infographics? AI can't do that yet, but it's over the horizon. And soon that'll come. And it's going to be mind-blowing. It's like, oh my God, do you need a designer anymore at that point? Even a photographer at that point? Maybe, but it's going to be wild. And then don't even get me started on video, where video is going.
We won't go there yet because I think we can imagine how fun that conversation is be. But I'm going to use my platform here to ask you one of these questions that has been bugging me for like a year. And maybe you actually have the answer to. You say the infographic's hard. And it is. Like if you ask Stable Diffusion to include text in an image, you get like some weird like... Mm-hmm. It's not text. Yeah. Some combination of Roman and Cyrillic stuff. Why is that so hard?
it's a very simple answer, and it's one that you're going to say, really? That's the reason? Data, training data. Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, DALL-E 2 simply didn't have that training data. But let's say, like, we're doing this ourselves. If you collect millions and billions of images, infographics, text, and you have a prompt output pair, the prompt being, for example, write an image with the following text and the following, let's say, infographics, and add an image, I don't know, of a puppy, and you have millions of these, the model eventually, you know, becomes as good as Canva, as good as a photographer, as good as a designer. It's as simple as that. It's a matter of data.
Seems like a fair answer as far as I understand it. Okay, well, this is really incredible. So I want to come back to sort of your journey as a founder. You are, I can see your eyes light up. So our audience is getting this audio only. And maybe we'll give you guys videos in the future, but you're getting this audio only. I see your eyes light up when you're talking about the tech. You're also building a business. How do you balance that enthusiasm you have about the future potential of the technology, the theory and making the theory real, with the day-to-day running a business? Because there's a lot of bright technical founders out there that are struggling with this question.
I mean, there's no right answer of how to best balance driving the vision, the roadmap, the tech, while also running the business. But I would say the way I do it is that everything that we build at its core is value to the end user. It's why we're building our own models in order to surpass ChatGPT and Stable Diffusion and others. We are building autonomous agents because that was the number one requested feature from thousands of our users. And we've done many focus groups and surveys, and many professionals at the enterprise level are dying to have this. We are building in a direction that is not only value added to our current users, the marketer, but eventually will be enormous value added to businesses. So that's what excites me. That's why I balance running the whole business. And is it rough? Yes, we're still very early at the pre-seed stage. And I spend many, many nights worrying and sweating and coding nonstop for like 24 hours. But I see light at the end of the tunnel. I see where this is all going. And I see our customers just yelling and screaming at us, give it. Give it to me. And that's what keeps me going to release these products over time.
All right. That's awesome. And, you know, Kostas, I have to tell you, I think this conversation is reinforcing or amplifying something that I think I knew, which is that this stuff's moving faster every day, but it's it's honestly giving me less and less certainty that I know what the future is going to bring, not on a decade's time horizon, on a, you know, years, months.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. I'm a child of sci-fi. I love this stuff. And also, yikes.
Oh, yeah.
But it's awesome. So, hey, for whether people are interested in Go Charlie, and everybody should go play with Go Charlie AI, right? You want everybody to go play with it?
Yeah, go play, especially in September when we launch a new product, the agent product.
Okay, perfect. So everybody should go play with Go Charlie AI and the agent product, which I'm super excited about. Besides that, what's the best way for folks to follow you and what you're doing? You on LinkedIn, Instagram? Are you, you know, posting content?
Everywhere. Follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter. We have accounts on Instagram, Facebook. We have a great Facebook group, GoCharlie.ai. We have a newsletter we're just launching now that talks about us and talks about generative AI as applied to marketing as a whole. We also have a great co-founders, who each of them post their own thought leadership. So Brennan, my other co-founder, posts a lot on the business implications. Despina, our AI co-founder, posts a lot on the AI implications. So find us on LinkedIn, get our names, and just Google us, and you'll find us everywhere.
Amazing. And all those links will be in the show notes. And you'd better believe I'm going to be subscribing to a little bit more. So, hey, as we close out here, Kostas, I'm wondering if you just have any sort of like final thoughts. This is a little more philosophical, but just final thoughts or words of wisdom for people who are observing the evolution of AI from the outside and are wondering kind of what it means. It's a big question, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I would say be very excited about where this is going. Yes, it's scary. Yes, it may start automating jobs. but view that as a net positive for society. We should want as many jobs to be automated because it starts to free us for other things. And who knows, maybe one day we'll adopt things like universal basic income and spend more time with our families. That's really what, you know, excites me at least. And so anyone who wants to follow more on AI, you know, there's many resources. You're a great podcast on this. I would say be excited, be optimistic, be hopeful to where it's going, and root for it too, to move even faster.
I love it, and root for it. Well, I'm rooting for it. I'm rooting for you. Costas, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the upcoming agent release of Go Charlie. I'm really excited to play with that. So the problem is I'm going to be showing up at your door being like, when do I get a sneak peek? Really appreciate you joining us, and good luck.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me in.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Take care.
So that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you found value and insight in today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget to share with your friends, colleagues, or anyone who is passionate about corporate innovation or just curious about great ideas and practical insights. Until next time, I'm Ian Bergman. Thanks for tuning in.